Hey crew, my guest today is Ryan Hawk. He is the host of the Learning Leader Show, which is a highly rated podcast. So he's about 260 episodes in, and he's interviewed all kinds of cool people who are thinking about what it means to lead well. He's also a well-known speaker and author, and I had a really fun conversation with him about the nature of leadership over the course of spending the last couple of years talking with some of the best business leaders around. He's also been a professional athlete and is a father. So our conversation has lots of the common themes that you'll find us discussing on Zen Founder. And podcast listeners, I wanted to let you know that even though Rob Walling is retired, doesn't mean that we are not still committed to putting out great content. We are weeks away from releasing our first video course. And Rob and I have worked together to pull together some of the best information and best strategies and tips that we have utilized to help create a healthy relationship in the midst of running multiple businesses and raising multiple kids. So it is a founder family date night bootcamp, 6 dates, 6 conversations, 6 short videos to introduce you to some great content, and then some conversation guides so you and your significant other can set aside an hour, some key one-on-one time together to have conversations that are designed to go a little deeper, be a little different, connect you in some hopefully new and different ways. So if that sounds like something interesting to you, head over to the Zen Founder site and you can sign up for our pre-launch list. And while you wait for that, feel free to enjoy this great conversation that I had with Ryan Hawk.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Walling.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
Hey, Ryan, thank you so much for joining me on the Zen Founder podcast today. I appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, Sherry, it's really cool to connect after that workshop where we met in person. So I'm excited to do this with you.
Yeah, I have been thinking a lot about that workshop. So we went to this workshop together that was kind of a connector workshop, a workshop to sort of help you think about your network and your relationships. And it was a small group, like 20 people, and it was just the perfect size to really make some good connections. So I'm glad that I got to be there with you.
Yeah, Jason Gaynard has always been, I think, really great when it comes to bringing quality people together. You know, he's got this built-in trust that I've developed with him over the years where, you know, if he is hosting people, that it's going to be full of the type of individuals that you want to be surrounded by. So I found, and if it was certainly true in Toronto, meeting you and so many other great people. So yeah, it's so cool to see that happen.
Well, cool. You spend your life thinking about, talking about, learning about, teaching about the concept of leadership. And to just sort of jump up with like a big picture question, like how do you define leadership? How do you think about leadership? What is it?
That's could go for a couple hours, but leadership to me is, first, leadership is a conscious choice and it's a massive responsibility. And to me, I believe everyone has the ability and the capacity to lead, but they certainly have to make that conscious choice to do so. And they have to care a lot about the people that they serve, and they should view it in that manner, that as a leader, you are in service to other people. Your primary role is to help others be successful, and their success precedes your own. And so if you view it that way, I find that as a leader, you can sustain excellence, as I like to say on my show when I talk to leaders, is that's what it comes down to. But really, if we wanted to go deep on leadership, I could talk to you forever. I love it and I'm fascinated by it. I study it. I try to teach a little bit as well. But yeah, anyway, I'll stop. I don't want to take the whole show up, Sherry.
Oh, well, we'll spend more time talking about it. But I just wanted your kind of off-the-cuff definition of the sort of key ingredients for you. What made you decide to spend your life working on this particular topic? What about the concept of leadership sort of cultivates your curiosity and engagement for you?
It started when I was younger playing sports. I got chosen by the coach to play quarterback when I was in second grade. My dad and my mom were leaders both in the professional world and in our community. I'm surrounded by it with two brothers as well. And so if you combine all of those things, I've been fascinated by seeing people who were able to do it successfully, first in sports. And then as I progressed from playing sports and primarily football, where I played quarterback, to the business world, the entrepreneur world, I've just been fascinated to see others who are able to move people, who are able to serve others successfully and help make big things happen. And so that's why I've really dedicated just about all of my time to studying it, to talking to people about it, and to teaching it.
When you were growing up, were you aware that your parents were leaders? Like, when did you come to recognize that?
Yeah, not really. I think I needed to mature and get a little bit older. They were very hard on us in a good way. So we had a lot of discipline in our house. There's three boys. I'm the middle of the crew. And I think they led more almost by action than by what they said. And as you know, kids are interesting that they will follow far more what they see than what their parents say. And so I think they modeled that behavior for us. And now, you know, I'm trying to do the same thing for my daughters. So I didn't really realize that, though, until I got a little bit older and more matured, that one, I was very lucky for the parents that I have in my life. They're still people that I talk to my mom and dad on a regular basis. I see them quite often as well. So I think I picked up on that as I matured, though.
And as you've come to recognize that in them, you know, as you look back, what are the things that they really taught you about leadership that were the seeds that now are flourishing?
The leaders show up. And by showing up, I mean, they were there constantly. So my younger brother, AJ, and I would drag my dad out of bed at all hours, either late at night or early in the morning, to shoot baskets, to throw football, to go to the batting cages where we'd ask them to turn the lights on. And I'd say they show up is what I learned first and foremost, is that in order to lead, you got to be there. And the best coaches that I ever had in my life were the same way. They showed up. They were always there for us. And that's, again, what we try to exhibit as well as parents. My brothers and I, we're all parents now. And I think that's the number one thing we think about is how can we show up? How can we be there on a consistent basis for our kids, just like our parents were for us?
Does that get challenging given the busyness of speaking schedule and all the things that you're involved with?
Definitely. It's very hard. When you have travel and other things you want to do, you do want to model. Now, I also have a practice of doing my best to taking our girls to some of my events. Certainly, if they're local, I will definitely take some of our children to the events every time, even if they don't necessarily want to go. They'll get tired of hearing me talk. But I think that's part of modeling the behavior that I want them to see. I talked to Tony Robbins' son, Jarek, about that when he was on my show. And he got, after a while, I think he might have got tired of it, but he did see the perfect model of what it's like to get up on stage and to move people. And so I try to do something similar, certainly on a smaller scale than Tony Robbins, but do something similar in my life.
Yeah, it's so neat to see. Well, I really enjoy seeing kids at events, and we've both my husband and I have enjoyed having our kids come to various times when we've been speaking or teaching in some way. And I think that's been really important for them also to know what we do and also to see us enjoying what we do.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's the part too. I want them to grow up to want to follow and try. I mean, I've always said this many times recently, but to try to do work that you love 100% of the time. And I'm fortunate to have a setup in that regard. And I want them to do the same thing, regardless of what it is. I don't particularly care what it is, but I do care that the direction they're headed in, they see that it's possible. And that, I again think it's our job as parents is to help them get prepared for them to do that in their life.
Yeah, I think sometimes we give the impression that being an adult is not very fun and that kids have all the fun. And I never want my children to think that, you know. I want them to know that there's a lot of joy and meaning and cool things to be done all throughout your life, but especially when you have the privilege of of being a leader and of raising other people and bringing other people along.
I think that is such a great point, Sherry, because you see, whether it's on TV or even some friends you notice where they get home from the day of work and they complain a lot. And that was something that my wife, Miranda, and I were very adamant about not doing, for lack of a better word, is to make sure that we are excited about what we do every day so that they can grow up to be excited about what the potential is for them to do. So I don't want them to feel like they just have to go to high school and then go to college and then just get a job to get by and to pay bills, but to try to create a life for themselves where they can feel fulfilled. They can certainly earn a living, but they can do it in a way that is much more enjoyable. Because if you think about it, we don't really live that long, and not to get too deep, but we really don't. And so we might as well try to figure out a way to enjoy it as much as humanly possible. And I do believe there's a way. I don't think it's easy, but I do think it's possible. And that's what we're trying to portray to them and show to them that it really is.
Oh yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I'm kind of an existentialist, so I'm real comfortable with the fact that our time is very finite and, you know, talk with my kids about that pretty regularly.
Yeah, it's true though. I mean, it really is. It's scary when you think about it. And I've seen Tim Urban at waitbutwhy.com writes a lot about that. But it truly is. It when you see the amount of time you have, it's not that much. So let's do our best to make it worthwhile.
Yeah. So you're about 260 something episodes into your Learning Leader podcast, The Learning Leader Show. So first of all, how'd you get started podcasting? Why was that a medium that you thought would be fun to jump into?
Yeah, well, I'm a big podcast fan, so I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I was more than 3.5 years ago when I started. So I had that. Then in my role, I was working in a big corporation at the time, and I was in sales leadership. So I was interviewing a lot of people. We were in growth mode, so we were hiring a ton. So I was interviewing people constantly. And then in addition to that, I had this really interesting dinner with a guy named Todd Wagner. And Todd is Mark Cuban's business partner. He started Broadcast.com with Mark and eventually sold it to Yahoo for $5.7 billion. And I was just lucky to have the dinner set up. And throughout the course of that dinner, it was about 2 hours long. And he told us the stories, the ups, the downs, everything in between, to eventually sitting face to face with the leaders at Yahoo and convincing them to buy their company. And him and Mark became billionaires. And I was blown away by the story. And I had one regret when I left the dinner, was just the fact that I did not have it recorded. And so I thought, wonder if I could use some of the ability I've picked up interviewing people in my sales leadership role with some of my just natural curiosity to have conversations like I had with Todd, and then to share it with everybody else via the podcasting medium, which is still in its infancy. If you think about it, even though it feels like a lot of people have podcasts, there's still more Americans that do not listen to podcasts than ones that do. So I thought maybe I could start one, and it could potentially make a difference in the lives of others. And fortunately, it has, and it's created some pretty cool opportunities for me.
What have been the high points for you? I mean, I know you've done a lot of interviews, but are there any that really stand out where you had a moment of epiphany for yourself, or a conversation that really changed the way that you think about your work or the nature of leadership?
Oh, there's so many, but I remember episode 78 with Kat Cole. Her story just incredibly moving and inspiring. Hooters waitress at 18, ended up getting her MBA before getting her undergraduate, which I'd never heard of, and fast-tracked her way all the way up to being now the COO of Focus Brands, and gives speeches on stages of thousands and thousands of people, and I think could be our future president, and I mean that, of our country. She's that impressive. That was a defining moment, I would say. Jim Collins wrote the book called Good to Great, which was like the management Bible for me when I first got into this leadership space many years ago, and it took about 2 years of back and forth phone calls with him and his team to eventually him agreeing to come on my show. That was a big one for me when I got Jim, and the fact that he was so kind and sweet and smart and prepared when we talked, because, you know, sometimes it can be dangerous to meet some of the people that you really look up to, but I've way more than not, in fact, I've been just so happy to connect, as I'm sure you are, as when you talk to these people that you have on your show. But I've been so happy to connect with people that I really look up to, and them living up to the hype. And so that's encouraging for me to keep doing it. And then obviously, as I know you get this as well, when you get the feedback from people who listen. They send you notes and emails, and they tell you about how you impacted their life in a positive way. There's truly maybe nothing better than that. And the fact that that's happening on a regular basis is fuel. It really is. It's fuel to keep doing it as good as I possibly can to help as many people as I possibly can.
Have you ever had an interview just go terribly wrong? Either because you were off or the guest was off, or like what happened?
Yeah. So I have probably over the course of 3.5 years, I have this folder, I'm looking at it right now, that's called maybe on my screen. And in the maybe folder is all of the bad interviews, which maybe always means in this case, no, meaning I'm not going to release it. So if I mess something up, if I don't do a good job, or for whatever reason, the guest doesn't seem to be prepared or do their part, I will not release it. So I do have probably more than 20 recordings in that folder. And that's unfortunate when it happens. It's definitely a bummer, but every once in a while it will. And to me though, I know every time I release an episode, there's somebody listening for the first time. And if I release a marginal or an average episode, that person is never coming back and they're never telling their friends. And so I hold the value and the quality of each and every episode that I release in the highest regard. So if an episode doesn't live up to that, then it's not going to get released. And so that's why that happens from time to time, unfortunately.
Yeah, certainly. Have there been moments that have kind of left you speechless?
In a good way or a bad way?
Either way.
Well, I think there have been a lot of surreal moments and where it's almost hard to say anything. I had Haben Gerba on. She is the first Harvard, a law school grad that is deaf and blind. And so I'm speaking like you and I are right now into the microphone, and I hear her translator typing into her Braille machine. And I would say throughout that 45 minutes to an hour, I just thought it was without the podcast, that would have never happened. And it was just an insanely cool and surreal moment for me. And she has this beautiful voice, has an incredible message. She advocates for those who have disabilities. And I think that of all episodes, that one probably left me speechless more than a few times, just because it just felt like this is such a cool thing that we're doing here. I'm so grateful to be a part of it and to be on the phone or to be on Skype with somebody like Haben.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. One of the things that I think about a lot in the leaders, the business owners that I talk with, is the role of ego. And, you know, ego from a sort of classic Freudian sense is just the thinking brain. And of course, it's been, you know, we've come to understand it as something along the lines of arrogance when it goes too far. But how do you... as you've talked with all of these leaders, like, how do you see the role of ego in leadership? And maybe how do you understand that word?
So it's interesting, you know, I'll bring up Kat Cole again, because Kat's the one that when I think of ego, I asked her, you know, what are some of the commonalities among the greatest leaders? And she said, like, think about this equal balance. And this is something that's really touched me, even though it's been 2 years since you told me this. So this the greatest, highest achievers who sustain excellence, this equal balance on one side is they're very courageous and they're very confident, right? And that and there may be some ego there on that side, but on the other side, it has to be equally balanced. They must be curious and humble. And if either side gets out of weight or out of balance just a little bit, it could be really bad. So on one side, if the courageous and the confident side gets out of balance, meaning the ego gets too big, they become this destructive force, this bull in a china shop. But on the other side, if you become too much, if you're too humble or too curious all the time, then you're basically sitting in the corner taking notes, just being a learner. So the best is to have an equal balance of both. And so I think about when you ask the question about ego, that scale comes to my mind of being a vital importance of what quality leaders possess.
I guess, what are the easiest points of failure for leaders? So people who are in charge of a team, they're leading a group in some way, like, what are the easiest ways to get it wrong or to get off balance?
Well, when I think about some leaders maybe I've worked with that have struggled, typically it's because they are very closed-minded. They have the opposite of a growth mindset. They don't approach each conversation with a curious mind. So to me, those are the qualities that I think are just just flat out necessary to have long-term sustained excellence as a leader is to be open-minded, to understand that you do not have it all figured out. If you think you do, you're definitely wrong. And there are two types of people in the world I found. There are people who are humble, and there are people who are about to be humbled. And so that to me, I found that I like to be surrounded by humble leaders, because I believe they have a much greater odds for success. And obviously, with every rule and everything we say, there are exceptions, but I found that to be true among the most people.
When I asked you at the beginning of our conversation, kind of your off-the-cuff definition about leadership, I think you said the word service several times. So talk to me about the role that service has played in your life.
So I think it's the mindset of the best leaders. So I always think about the best ones that I've had in my life, coaches, leaders in business, outside of that, friends, mentors. And they're the ones who, my dad is definitely like this. They're the ones who truly feel that, I mentioned this, that their success only follows the success of the people that they serve, the people that they take care of, the people that they support. And so if you think about like an organizational chart at a big company, I don't have org chart anymore, what I do, but when I used to, and I always would visually actually flip it upside down. And so if you view it, if you're a leader of a big company, you're the CEO of your SVP of whatever, flip it upside down where you put yourself on the bottom and that you report to each and every one of those people that technically report to you. That's what service means to me, is that my mindset is always, how can I care and take care of the people that I'm in charge of, the people that I've made a choice to lead, right? Because leadership's about making that choice, because it's a massive, massive responsibility. And to serve other people is really what it's all about in my mind when it comes to leadership.
And how do you think that plays out differently, maybe for female leaders versus male leaders? And maybe it's not different. I'm assuming difference there, but
you know, I that's a good question. I'm curious. What, I'm not trying to flip it on you, but what would you say as somebody who, you know, I'm a male leader, you're a female leader. I'm curious. What do you think about that?
Well, that excellent skill, by the way, answer a question with a question.
No, I'm serious. No,
we can go back and forth on this. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I think there is some challenge, and I'm going to speak a little bit in stereotype and default. So I will inherently be incorrect, because there's lots of variety and lots of ways that people show up as leaders and as humans. But I think if we take maybe a sociocultural default, which suggests that women more often carry the load of service or of caring for other people, that I think sometimes that can be the sort of truncate or keep those women who would be maybe natural leaders kind of in the corner, taking care of other people rather than feeling like they can rise to the level of saying, I can take care of you, but I can also, you can follow me, you can imitate me. Although I think caretaking can be a great joy, it can also be, I think, something that can be a trap a little bit for women.
That's interesting. I think that's a really good point, that as a guy, I think there's just so many more advantages, which is, I do think is changing though. And I'm happy to see that. And Kat's one of the people leading that charge, and there are others certainly, but that I do feel like being born a white male, just, you know, I don't know what it's like to be in the minority hardly ever. And so in a way, it's not necessarily fair in that regard. But I think that's a good point, because it also helps me get perspective. That's why I've kind of flipped it and asked you, because I need a healthy dose of what that perspective is like on a regular basis, because I don't think, you know, it just inherently isn't within me to think that way. And so that's why having these conversations can be so helpful.
Yeah, it's interesting too when we think about how we instill leadership in our children. I mean, you're raising daughters. I'm raising two sons and a daughter. And yeah, what skills they need that are maybe different, and what skills they need that are exactly the same.
Yeah. One of the things we talk about that I don't like in society is, it's like, I've even heard LeBron James from Ohio. I live in Ohio and he's great. But one of the things he said is he wants his boys to grow up to like be NBA superstars, and he wants his daughter to grow up to marry a prince. And I just thought that was a very odd statement, because I was hoping that he would say he wanted his daughter to grow up to do something more than just marry a great guy. And to me, I thought that was kind of set women back a little bit, because we talk to our daughters about that a lot, and the fact that it's, we want you to grow up to be strong, independent leaders, not necessarily grow up to try to marry somebody great. Like, obviously I want, if I had, whether it was son or daughter, you want them to grow up and have a great partner, but that's not, I don't like that statements like that seem to come out of people's mouths from time to time.
Yeah, that's not their qualification. That's an important part of life for men and for women, for every human being.
Right, right.
It's not the thing that makes them great.
I know he meant it well, but just kind of, like I said, I don't think of it that way. I think my wife's a great model of that for our girls too, of how independent and strong, and she gets up on stages and does it too, just like you do, Sherry. And I think that modeling of the behavior can be as powerful as anything though that we as parents do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we can want our sons to grow up and play for the NBA and for our daughters to own the team.
Exactly. Why not?
What has been your greatest source of joy in these last couple of years?
Oh, wow. Family related, it's certainly just seeing the growth and the knowledge gained by our girls is certainly in the strength and relationship. I mentioned to you when we were at that workshop how my wife and I are starting to host our own dinners here at home with other great couples. So those things are joyful. When it comes to the professional side of things, I think, as I mentioned briefly earlier, I get so much joy. Just yesterday, so there was somebody who worked for me in my old role before I left the corporate space, and she wrote this note to me about saying how this, my podcast was helping her so much, and she was so grateful for it, and you know, wrote a lot of nice things. And like I said, I'm lucky to get those emails, and I know you feel the same way, that brings so much joy to me to see people, whether they're random strangers that I've never met or people that I have worked with closely, to see them getting value in their life being better because of some of the work that we're putting out.
Yeah, to see the benefits of the service, or see the way that you're serving a need in people.
Exactly. Yeah.
And one of the things you do is that Mindful Monday email. And I was particularly drawn to that because of the use of the term mindful or mindfulness. Like, what does that mean to you? And why is that, you know, something you would email people about every Monday?
So we learn in moments of reflection. And I hope that I send it out every Monday morning at 9 Eastern. And my hope is that it creates a moment of reflection for people. So I'm sharing, I spend so much more time than I even care to admit putting that email together every weekend to go out Monday morning. But I try to find the best of the best that makes me think, things that help me learn. So it's usually a handful of articles, podcasts, videos, things like that, or book recommendations that I think can help you grow as a person and as a leader. And I use the word mindful because I found, if you, again, look at some of the commonalities of leaders who sustain excellence, is that they're very thoughtful people, they're very mindful about it, and they're very conscious about their actions and what they do. And so that, to me, is important. They're intentional, right, with what their actions are. And so to me, I want you to be intentional about creating moments of reflection. And if I can help create that in your routine to get the week started, that's really my goal. And so far it's grown, and it seems to be doing that. But to me, just the practice of putting it together is a great learning experience every single week as well. Because like I said, I spend hours searching for those things and reading them, and then saying, okay, this is good enough to share with the people who have decided to be a part of this group that I send it to.
Yeah, it's your own practice of mindfulness, both paying attention and being intentional.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely.
When you think about the leaders that you've known or studied, what are some of the psychological challenges, that maybe the mental health challenges that you've noticed or seem to be common among folks who are in leadership positions or are excelling?
That is really interesting. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that, Sherry. I'm not surprised though to hear you ask that. And I am going to flip it to after I'm not going to do it right now though. What I think is a little concerning that I found is a lot of the people that I talk to spend an immense amount of time working. And I think, as you've mentioned before, that could lead to a host of issues when it comes to happiness, when it comes to family life, if you feel like you never take a moment to celebrate, if you never take a moment to be more gentle on yourself, people like you and I think, and others that we interview and we talk to are very hard on themselves, and that can have lasting effects into other parts of their life, particularly their families. And so I think that's the one area that can be concerning for me when I think about it. But I'd love to hear what you think about that, because I know you study this.
Well, yeah, I will second your answer in terms of the level of self-criticism and kind of this attitude of like, what's next, rather than moments to celebrate and moments to relax and moments to rest. I think the other thing that I see a lot in high performers is like a sense of loneliness. And that can be, you know, be feeling alone when you're surrounded by people, because obviously many leaders spend the vast majority of their day in the presence of others. But deep connections, deep friendships, I think that can be a challenge when you are carrying the weight of many others that are important to you, but that can also be a pretty isolating experience. And loneliness and isolation is incredibly bad for our human mental health. We don't do well alone.
Yeah, I agree. Do you do, like, when you study people who come back who are combat veterans, is there relations here or is it completely different?
Well, I think that's a common problem, especially because in that situation, you're often taking people away from a connected group. So a group that is deployed together doesn't necessarily live in the same community. So sometimes they do, but sometimes they're returning from service and then they're sort of dropped back into this other context without the brothers and sisters that sustained them or held them up or with whom they have shared experiences.
Yeah, I know you work with them, so I was curious of how that relates with entrepreneurs. And I know it's completely different, but maybe there are some parallels there.
Well, I do think it's why getting in the room with other entrepreneurs, with other founders, with other leaders who are taking risks and putting themselves out there and being of service to others, where you have a sense of well-cultivated peers, that can be life-saving, I think, for people.
Yeah, I think that's why things like mastermind talks and events like that can be so powerful, is because, like you said, it can be lonely, it can be hard, it can be certainly gratifying, but it's also can be pleasant to connect with others who have similar things going on in their life.
Yeah, and my sense is that a lot of your work, whether intentionally or not, does a lot to cultivate a sense of community and belonging and connection with people who are leading at, you know, whatever size their tribe is. They listen to an episode of you talking with another leader and they can nod along and say, yeah, me too. Or they can say, hey, I need to try that, or hey, I can learn from that. And I think I'm grateful for your work because of the goodness that it puts out there in the world, but also the way in which it helps to elevate all of us.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. And I think, you know, the cool thing that stemmed from that is, and from those emails is the creation of like-minded circles of people. And so I do have formal leadership circles where we meet on a regular basis for people all over the country via Zoom. And that's fun. And we're doing an in-person meet up as well. So I like the thought of bringing people with a growth oriented mindset together, because I think the building of the community to me is, you know, I came from a sports background. I played football. I was on a team of 100 guys. I walked into a huddle and called the play to 10 others. I like being surrounded by teammates, by people who are kind of going in the same direction. And so when you leave that, it can be hard. I mean, it's a different form of PTSD, but it can be hard to find other avenues to make up for some of that you miss. That is, in some cases, you can never get it back, and not saying you have to, but you've probably seen there's a lot of former athletes who struggle, even the ones who made lots of money, because they miss that so much.
Yeah, there's that sense of belonging, which people are hungry for, people long for. So besides checking out the Learning Leader show and signing up for Mindful Monday emails, are there other ways that people can keep track of you, what you're doing, if listeners are curious?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everything's at learningleader.com. So you can check out everything you mentioned there. That'll should hit on everything. If you want to connect on Twitter, it's at RyanHawk1212 and pretty active on there. So I'd be happy to talk. Yeah, it's been so cool to connect with you here, Sherry.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. Was 12 your football number?
Yep, that is. I was lucky to kind of have it all the way through in high school, college, and even after college. So I just tacked it on there when somebody had stole just my name on social. So,
you retain your name and in this part of your identity.
Yeah, too. I'd add a number, which I'd rather not, but whatever. I'll do what I have to do.
Do your daughters like to go out and throw the football around with you?
We play basketball, okay. Soccer, a little golf, and football. We'll throw balls around, but not necessarily football. But yeah, we definitely get out, and we have a trampoline too. So we're like flipping and jumping and doing those things. We there's a lot of sports being played, and right now there's no specialization. It's like, let's just play it all. So yeah. I love that.
Fantastic. Well, hey, I've appreciated spending a chunk of my afternoon with you, and thank you so much for your time, and keep doing the awesome work you're doing.
Thank you, Sherry. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.